You guys are putting in the work and spending the time, and I think, you know, tonight the best sign was the quality contact and the amount of balls we kept off the ground. We've been hitting a lot of hard balls, but beating them into the ground and not getting any results, and I think tonight was probably our best game of the year at having quality contact. So that was good to see.
There you go, Kevin Barker. Six runs for your Blue Jays. Six. Count them. Six. The first time in 21 games. Six runs. The Blue Jays beat the Royals 6-5. Last night at the Rogers Center. Do you agree with Justin Turner, who had two home runs, that all told in terms of quality of contact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, yada, 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 that was the best we've seen of the Blue Jays this year?
This year, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, absolutely. I mean, Varsho had...
I think he said this season.
Absolutely. I mean, if he said it, we'll just take his word for it. Varsho had some good at-bats. Vladdy obviously had some good at-bats. Turner had some good at-bats. Jansen had a good at-bat. IKF had some good at-bats. Davis Schneider looks like he wants to play more. Barger got his first hit. Absolutely. Like, that sort of... I think when you have your shortstop sitting over there on the bench having a good time and laughing it up, you go out and... get a bunch of hits and score
having
six
a good time
runs.
And
he was.
It
that's exactly what he needed to do. Let's get away from it. Have a good time. Smile every once in a while. Enjoy baseball.
Don't you think he should sit there and frown and be angry and bitter? Be angry and bitter. I mean, yeah. that's what you're supposed to do when you're benched. Bitter and
now he was benched.
Show some fire and have the camera over there and look. There's Bo seething. I'm kidding. You know I'm kidding. Yeah. Bobichek got the day off
yesterday.
Good
for him. Yeah. Hopefully he comes back today, gets three hits, and this is what we start to see more of. The timing was better. I think that was Turner's point, was you have to have good time. You have to catch balls out front to get them in the air. And, you know, I just think the approach is, boy, well, we've been beating that word to death. But they were a little bit better. They were staying in the big part of the field. Bottom of the order had better at-bats. Turner, you know, he seems to be the one guy that I think, I mean, it might be a lot to ask a 39-year-old, but – you know, he might be the guy that has to carry this team for a while, so some other guys can play a little catch up and figure some timing issues out and gain a little bit more confidence. And you know what the old saying is, Jeff, join the party. Hopefully they do that sooner than later.
Team wide approach.
When's the last time you heard them say that?
Actually, that's a good point. Well, that's because they've been in bail and water mode.
There. Well, I mean, that
team wide approach goes out the window when it ain't working.
That's like a Dalton Varsho hitting cleanup to start the season last year. Like that just doesn't make no sense, right? That's a tough sale, especially to guys who have been through the grind before and understand that it's a very individual thing, and you can't tell everybody to do the same exact thing when they walk to the plate because, you know, everybody's trying to do a little something different. So. Maybe this is a good step forward.
They offensively coordinated differently last night than they have earlier in the year. Anyhow, a 6-5 win. Yariel Rodriguez, 3 2/3 innings, 6 hits. You've talked about this a lot, about his lack of efficiency. He gave up, speaking of hard-hit balls, he gave up some hard-hit balls last night. John Schneider saying after the game he thought that perhaps the fact that he was using his slider so much suggested he was trying to sort of pitch the strikeouts a little more as opposed to simply getting out. And we've talked about this with Yariel Rodriguez. What do you do when you get to two strikes on a batter? I mean, you look at the at-bats last night and the number of different pitches he threw with two strikes. He did throw the slider a lot, but Kevin, his fastball's so good.
Yeah.
My point is, if your fastball is good enough to get you an 0-2 count or a 1-2 count, and guys swing and miss, like, why get too crafty?
Yeah, I'm sure he got paid doing it that way. I mean, that's the easiest answer I can give you is, you know, again, I bring back that old Gibby saying when I was standing behind the batting cage and I said, why is dudes ain't hitting it where they stand? They ain't standing. And he's like, because they didn't make it the big leagues that way.
Yeah, but the point is he's no longer a reliever.
That's his four star. It's got nothing to do with it. He was using those pitches anyway. It's just refining sort of what you're trying to do quicker. Like, you want efficiency. You want action as soon as you can get it, right? The more you have quality stuff, the more you attack the zone, the more you could sort of stay away from throwing sweepers instead of sliders. I mean, he's got a decent slider. Sometimes he overthrows it. I think he chokes it off on purpose because he doesn't want it in the zone. He wants to get guys swinging and missing on that pitch, and maybe that's what he got where he,
it did take,
he was from.
His velocity was down a little bit. Maybe he was taking a little bit off last. Oh, that was his first start of normal rest. And
I mean, I think you're trying to give him a little bit more credit than probably he deserves. I think what you can take away from that is – you know, we did see some 98s. We did see some good breaking balls. We did see him throwing strike one quite a bit. It's just everything else. Everything else for me, what's the split finger? I mean, who throws a 93-mile-an-hour split finger? I mean, he throws it so hard, he can't move. Like, I mean, that for me, I don't know how you adjust that. Maybe that's you grip it different. Maybe you choke it off a little bit more. When you put it deeper in your fingers, maybe you can't throw it as hard. To where it will move is, you know, a little bit more, have it sink maybe a little bit more into a righty, way to a lefty. That may be the change of speed pitch that he needs. You know, again, when he's a little bit more on top of the slider, it's good. When he's on the side of it and it's more of a sweeper, it ain't no good because it's non-competitive out of the hand. And, you know, good lineups, good big league hitters are going to take that. That's why the deep counts. That's why you're seeing a 21-pitch first, a 22-pitch second. He had a decent third of 15 mm-hmm. pitches, and he had a 24-pitch fourth till he came out of the game. It's those, right? It's the – you attack the zone. You do it with movement with the fastball. I mean, the four-seamer naturally cuts. Throw that a little bit more, outer thirds, inner thirds. You know, you can do it to lefties. You can do it to righties. It's just – do you need all of them? Do you need the different arm angles? Do you need the start and stop? I like the start and stop. I think that's good at, you know, disrupting timing from a hitter, and you can do something with that. All the other stuff, I think that's sort of the work in progress, right? And we've talked about this with Yusei Kikuchi. Pete Walker's very good at getting out of the way and sort of figuring out what a guy does well and what he doesn't do well. I'm sure after four starts – you're starting to refine, you know, what you think maybe his next start should look like. Maybe you refine a little bit more of the sequencing and maybe you eliminate a pitch. Maybe you don't need all those pitches. Maybe you don't need two different breaking balls. Maybe you don't need to try and throw a sweeper because he's dropping down sidearm to a righty with two strikes. Like, those are useless pitches, I think, is the point. Because he has elite stuff, you don't got to trick them all the time. So, yeah, I think you build off of it. I think the conversations are probably going to get a little bit longer with him and Petey, and they'll start turning him into what I think they think he can be,
I think,
to help them win a baseball game.
I think the
3 2/3, Jeff's just not good enough. That's the point.
You pointed out the arm angles as well. And I keep referring to guys that I covered, especially like Pedro Martinez, who could drop his arm angle, but he didn't do it. That was something he kept in his back pocket. That was the little bit of trickery he kept in his back pocket. You wouldn't see him necessarily do it.
Seventh inning with two strikes.
Exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily see him do it in the first or second inning. That's something he'd keep to, you know, to pull out if he needed it. And quite often in days, and he would admit, quite often in days when he just wasn't feeling 100% later in the game, he would have to do
that. I'm sure it's worked. Where he was at before,
I'm sure you can see it working.
Not at this level, you can't. Just because I drop down sidearm doesn't mean against a good right, he ain't going to do it against a bad right-handed hitter. He's going to do it against a really good right-handed hitter when he's ahead in the count. Well, you don't have to do that. Most good right-handed hitters, when they're behind in the count, what do? They let the ball travel. They think the other way. And they're trying, you know, a lot of this. Buck Martinez talks about this all the time. Really good run producers that are right-handed sit breaking ball with two strikes. That's the point, right, is sometimes you just don't have to do those things. I'm not saying you don't throw a breaking ball with two strikes. But I'm saying, why do you need three different ones? And sort of what is the split finger? That I think is sort of what they're, I'm assuming, you know, going to try and refine and get a little bit better at. And, you know, can you continue to run him out there giving you 90 pitches at 3 2/3? I mean, that's a lot to ask a bullpen to make up for that kind of stuff.
This is the big question. Now, they got away with it last night, barely.
Yeah.
A 6-5 win. Credit Nate Pearson for coming in. And I mean, there were two men on base when he got the game.
Positivity.
Yeah, but
he got it done.
But he got it done.
We've seen Jordan Romano finish it out with two guys on base.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, that looked like a Jordan Romano
be nice.
Save.
They got it done.
No, it did.
Yeah,
it did. It wasn't necessarily 1-2-3, but they got it done.
Yeah.
But my whole point is, though, because they don't have Bowden Francis right now, and the plan was to piggyback him with Yariel Rodriguez, last night I think was a bit of a bullet dodged. I think John Schneider probably had to go to his bullpen. I don't know. Does John Schneider honestly think Yariel Rodriguez is going to give him five innings every time he goes out there? I think he probably does.
Every once in a while.
But I think basically John Schneider had to use his relievers an inning earlier than he wanted to use them as a result of that. So, Kevin, now we know Alek Manoah is starting tonight at AAA against Paul Skeens, by the way, which is a pretty good. Yeah, and I mean, if Alek wants a little extra motivation, maybe facing the guy that is a top pitching prospect in baseball might do it for him. But my point is this. I think in the Jays' perfect world, Alek Manoah does something in these next two starts, and they seem to have pinpointed these next two starts in particular. He does something in these next two starts, shows enough, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but shows enough that they can bring him up here, and then you can figure out what to do with him and Yariel Rodriguez. Maybe have one piggyback off the other. I think that's what they're working towards right now. But if that doesn't happen, what do you do?
Keep running him out there.
And you basically plan for the possibility you're only going to get four innings. I'm not second guessing you. I'm saying that basically you have to do that.
That means your other four guys have to be really good. They have to go deeper in games. They have to give some guys some breaks.
You needed a game like you. I mean, thank God Gossman gave them.
I think it's more about the Hennessy's Cabreras and the Trevor Richards and Tim Mays is starting to look better. And, you know, Swanson, I know when the split finger ain't no good, I could hit it. But, you know, he's starting to throw harder, and he doesn't let that one, you know, hard hit ball sort of ruin his outing. So you're starting to like what you're seeing from him. You know, Pearson, I don't know if they have enough confidence to give him the ball when the other two guys are raring and ready to go. But, look, I like Nate Pearson's breaking ball better than I like his slider. Like, when he's sitting at 98 to 101, you know, you could throw him more in the eighth and ninth inning, a little bit more in the meat of the order. I mean, that's 1, 2, 3, 4. He's having to come in and locate and, you know, make sure that when he does throw a breaking ball, it's a good one. You snap it off. You make sure your misses are better. And the moment and who you don't have standing out there behind you, I mean, you give Nate credit. So, yeah, look, I think perfect scenario, they're a better team when Alek Manoah is starting and Yariel Rodriguez can sort of because of the, you know, what he's not going to throw this year, which is probably, I would assume, he ain't going to throw no more than 150 innings. So you'd rather have him in a lot of those, especially with his stuff, and he can refine that and simplify it a little bit more, just concentrate on, you know, being mechanically sound and have a better finish, and, you know, maybe just the slider will be better in the bullpen. So, yeah, I think Alek Manoah, this is a big start or two for him. We need to start seeing better from him. I mean, let's be honest. It's getting warmer now in Buffalo and, you know, the minor leagues and – you know, he should be mechanically sound enough. The sinker should be going where it's going. The slider, all those things should be good.
And you know what?
We need to see better.
I mean, and they're coddling him, too. They've got him up here. He's not in Buffalo with the rest of the Bisons. He's up here in a nice, warm, comfy indoor stadium. He's got, you know, all the benefits of being around a major league clubhouse without necessarily being in the major leagues. Like, I'm with you. I'll tell you, he's getting the kid glove treatment.
I think they understand that they need him in the rotation and him being around the other older guys to just sort of know how to, you know, figure out ways to get through whatever he's going through. And I'm not even going to act like I know what that is. I just know the slider hadn't been real good. And for whatever reason, the sinker, when he throws it to a right, he's just not ending up where he wants it to end up. So I just think that's a good thing. Like, I understand your point, and, you know, probably sooner than later that rubber's going to meet the road. But I sort of like the way they're handling that. Like, they understand he's important to this rotation.
The thing is that
they need him.
Yeah, and if you don't – but I am saying, I mean, what it does do is it prevents any idea that he is being punished for anything by having him up here. Right? As if you just left him down in AAA.
I think, to your point, when does performance matter? That, I think, is the question.
Well, whenever his IL
when is that?
Stands,
I don't even pay any attention. When is that? That's soon, I think, right?
It is soon. I think that's probably why the you know, it's a matter of pitter patter, let's get at her with the with the next couple of starts.
Bang, bang, boom.
You like that? Davis Schneider in his last 8 games, hitting .300, 2 doubles, a home run, 4 ribbies. He's got a .990 OPS. Play him every day, man.
Well, you would think so. I mean,
let's just say it. Play him every day.
I'm sure there's some khakis raising their hand and going, you know, bat pass, and it doesn't match up to a guy because he likes the elevated fastball. He's made adjustments, and they are obvious. That's what I love about this. Sometimes the adjustments can't be, oh, he's made them, but nobody can see them, and he sure don't want to talk about it. He doesn't care. I'm going to get closer to the plate because I don't like the slider down and away. It gives me a better chance of getting that thing in the air to the pull side. And if I do that, because I have a lot of bat speed and I can hit the ball really hard and really far by making that one adjustment. Hey, look, sometimes as a player, all you can do is your part. Now it's up to the organization and the manager to write your name in the lineup no matter what. And for me, he's earned it.
Yeah.
It's real simple. Like, you can't argue.
Cannot argue.
He's earned it. So hopefully every single day, righty, lefty, submarine, Barker on the mound, who cares? Put him in the lineup.
Well, let's see what he can do.
Well, we know what he can do. He's made adjustments.
Let's forget about the bath path. I'm sure they're not going to do that. I'm sure they're not going to do that because, when you have a whole bunch of people giving you information, there's a whole part of the thing is protecting your job, right? And you want your information to be taken and utilized. You don't want people saying, forget about it. But I would, I'd let him go. I would absolutely let him go. Why not?
That's the old eye test. Eye test to tell you the kid's standing closer to the plate and getting better pitches to hit because of it. Yeah. And he's hammering him things.
He is.
Because he's got bat speed. That's the one surprising part for me, watching him on an everyday basis.
When did you realize that?
Not until lately. Until recently.
You're talking about bat speed.
Let's not lie to you. You scoot closer to the plate, you better get going. Like, these boys throwing hard, and they see the same thing that everybody else sees. And that catcher, I'm sure the first time he did it, when they've doing all their scouting reports on where he's standing and how you can throw him and what you're going to give him with 2 strikes, and you can get him out maybe early in counts because of where he's standing. And now the catcher, he walks to the plate, and he stands where he's standing now, and that catcher goes, uh-oh, what's the first thing you tell yourself? Now we got to crowd him, see if he can get the head out. And he's starting to do it. Doing it with some authority in the air means his timing's better, means he's standing a little taller with his upper half. Right? I've talked to you. You got to impress because a lot of people didn't know who Davis Schneider was. Yep. And to impress, you have to get the ball in the air to the pull side with a bent upper half. That's called launch angle. That creates big-time loft in your swing. That's how we did it. And now to combat that, big league pitching starting to elevate the ball. Now he's just a tick taller. Not tremendous amounts, but enough that maybe he could foul it off. Mm-hmm. They're not perfect enough to throw 3 of them up there.
Right.
And I think he's starting to realize, don't give him so much credit.
Yeah.
I can stand right here. Sooner or later, I told you this yesterday. Stop giving him so much credit when you're on the on-deck circle and listen to everybody tell you before you walk to the plate how good that dude is and never misses. Yeah. How many times have you watched a game where no pitcher threw a ball down the middle? It is very, very rare. I mean, Kevin Gausman may have had the best start he had all season, and he left some balls down the middle and didn't get them back. See, that's the difference, right? I think I went through it where I gave him way too much credit. Cost me big league time. The sooner you stop giving him so much credit, the better off you'll be. And I just think him scooting closer tells you all you need to know about Davis Schneider.
Yeah, it's, why tinker with success right now? And I understand that we've gone through this before earlier this year where was it Davis Schneider or Dalton Varsho didn't play after a particularly
Dalton,
good game.
Lefty Dalton. On the mound the next day, it's a homer.
You know, the two arguments were the guys finally got something going, let him run out there. The counter argument is, hey, he's doing well because of the way we're using him. So we're going to continue using him the way we've been using him. Thank you very much. And that may be the situation with Davis Schneider, but I just think given the type of games he has when the Jays do put together something offensively, he's involved. And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah,
he's involved.
Let's put it to you this way: if you had an option between Barger or Schneider, Schneider's in the lineup.
Yes,
I don't care if there's a righty on the mound or not. Like, he's having way better at bats. That, I think, is the point. Is right now, because of what your team consistently is not doing, and you got a dude who, quite frankly, is fighting for playing time. I mean, you can see it.
Oh,
like, the adjustments that he's made, and
he wants to be an everyday major leaguer.
He doesn't care to show you that he's made these adjustments. I mean, I've talked to other guys who are real quiet. We've even had John on here, and I said, why don't they move around the batter's box? Oh, they have.
Really?
Oh, well, nobody can tell that. It's that kind of thing. And I think you're seeing some urgency there where, you know, you might see some opportunity. Guys ain't getting it done. Maybe I can get it done a little quicker, get my name in the lineup. I take off. Now I'm an everyday player. It's kind of nice to watch. And he's a decent left fielder. I think you don't care about him standing out there. He's going to catch the balls and hit the cutoff guy.
I've always told you about the whole thing about left field. I do subscribe to the theory that if your left fielder's making a lot of plays in the game, things aren't going well for you. There is something to be said for. It's not like you can stick a butcher completely in left field. Look, it depends on the ballpark. Look what happened to Addison Barger in that game against Kansas City. But, yeah, if I have to sacrifice defense, I'll sacrifice
but
it I in
like
left
it.
Field.
But you're not really sacrificing it. I mean,
no, but I'm saying I certainly wouldn't sit there and say, you know what, I'm not going to play Davis Schneider in left field because I need to be better defensively. That's what I'm saying. I would not do that. I want Davis Schneider in the lineup.
All John's got to say is we ain't scoring no runs, and he can hit right now.
And you know what it is? Hey, look, we've talked about this organization and the lack of minor league depth and yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here's a guy they produced, a guy nobody thought anything of.
It's a great story.
And it is. It's a great
favorite, too, which is kind of cool to watch.
It's good when people have somebody they like. If people are paying money to come out and see you play, yeah, it's true. You know, we have this argument all the time. What's more important, a winning team or a popular team? I do think that over the long run, people will come out to watch a winning team as opposed to a team full of colorful personalities that finish in last place. But there's nothing wrong with having a guy that people relate to and people like. And quite frankly, a guy who what I like about him and Ernie Clement when they play, it looks to me like they're enjoying being in the major leagues. And I'm not saying they're running around and high-fiving and doing cartwheels. I just get the sense that these guys are really embracing the moment and really enjoying it, and I like to see that. Why not? What the hell's the point of being a major leaguer if you can't enjoy it?
Yeah, I think the difference is a lot of the expectations are on other guys in the lineup and not those guys.
But it's good to realize that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the sooner you sort of just stay within yourself and nice and free and easy and go out there and sort of let the game come to you instead of trying to force the game, you'll be the best you can be. I just like it because a year and a half ago, you couldn't have picked Davis Schneider out of a lineup. And he's earned it now. And I just think that's cool with everything he sort of evolved into. And
why not?
He's got some bat speed, and he just thumps on baseballs, which is fun to watch.
Yeah,
once in a while, you just like to see it.
Addison Barger got his first major league hit last night, which was kind of cool. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to judge Addison Barger based on what we've seen of him so far. The play at third base last night, you pointed out, ball with that much topspin. You talked about this in Blue Jays talk. You've got to attack it. You can't let it play.
It's an in-between ball.
That's something he'll probably
learn. A righty hit it. It's got topspin. You're out and around. It's topspin ball. It means when it hits the ground, it's going to kick up hard on you.
I'll tell you what.
It's very hard to play that ball.
He does throw the ball hard.
I mean, he's not messing around. He's letting it eat.
He does throw the ball hard. David Sampson will join us later on in the show. Ben Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play voice. Eric Hosmer in a few minutes. He, of course, is a member of the 2015 World Series champion Kansas City Royals. We remember that team fondly in this city. His podcast is Digging Deep. It's available on YouTube. It's a cool podcast. The most recent one had a Jerks and Profar and Fernando Tatis Jr. on, and a lot of good inside baseball stories, including Ha Seong Kim smoking cigarettes on a regular basis, which was kind of neat.
Better all that.
Bobby Witt Jr. was on one of his recent podcasts as well. So we'll talk to Eric about the Royals. They are in town for two more games. We'll talk to him about the Royals and some of his other former teams as well, the Padres included. 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight. It will be a good one. Cole Reagan's on the mound for the Kansas City Royals. Jose Berrios for the Blue Jays. A reminder, tomorrow is an afternoon game. Seth Lugo against Chris Bassett. We will be on following that game with Blue Jays talk on TV and radio. There was something else I wanted to ask you about out of last night's game. Beep-bidi-bidi. And I cannot remember what it was. So, I'm going to take a break. Come back and...
It's quality radio right there.
It is. We'll take a break. Come back and be joined by Eric Hosmer. It's Blair and Barker. I think.
What a way to lead us, Jeff.
Is it Blair and Barker? It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet. It's more Barker than Blair.
No question.
Thank God. On Sportsnet, 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays and the Kansas City Royals play the second of a three-game series at the Rogers Center. Should be a good pitching matchup. Cole Reagan's on the mound for the Royals. Jose Berrios for the Blue Jays.
Are we doing a winning edition after the game?
It'll be a short edition with the Leafs playing.
Winning edition, yes or no?
I don't know. Cole Reagan's a pretty
good. He's tough.
I mean, it's a tough call. The Jays scored 6 runs yesterday for the first time in 21 days, so
miracles
who knows,
happen.
Maybe. And they're 2-0. They're 2-0 since the boys went out to watch the Leafs play that playoff game.
It did it. Watch how it's not supposed to look, and you go out and try to be
go out and watch the Leafs spit out the bit and go off on a little bit of a winning streak. Anyhow, enough of that. Let's get to our next guest. He is host of the Digging Deep podcast. He's a World Series champion in 2015 with the Kansas City Royals. We remember that Royals team in Toronto, don't we?
Yeah.
We remember them. Warm feelings for the 2015 Royals team. He is Eric Hosmer. Eric, thanks so much for joining us on Blair and Barker today. I'm not going to dwell on 2015. I will get to it in a few minutes. But in one of your recent podcasts, which are available on YouTube, you had Bobby Witt Jr. on. And, you know, we've seen him now because there was a 4-game series against the Royals and the Jays are in the middle of a 3-game series against him. We've gotten a chance to see this guy this year up close, and I wouldn't say personal, but certainly up close. We had Dan O'Dowd on about a week ago, and we were talking about how a long-term contract for a young player can impact a young player. And Dan's point about Bobby Witt Jr. was, he said, there's some guys where a long-term contract creates expectations. For a guy like Bobby Witt Jr., I think it creates a certain amount of freedom, and that freedom is going to allow him to be as good as he can be. You know him a little bit. Do you see it that way, that he's the type of guy who's going to take this contract and rise to the occasion and embrace it?
I do, and as a GM, I see nothing but comfort in giving a guy like this that length of a deal for that amount of money, because at the end of the day, when you're a small market team, you have to make moves like this in order to keep your superstars. I think Bobby Witt in a couple of years would get to a point where he's just kind of outplaying his market to be in a small market like Kansas City. So I think what the front office did here to identify the talent, identify the makeup off the field as well, it just seems like a perfect match. And I really do love the move, because I think this is a guy you build around for at least the next 10 plus years.
I mean, it seems to me that the Royals, and first of all, Kevin and I talked about this a little bit. I think baseball's better, frankly, when the Royals are really good.
Absolutely.
To me, they're one of the franchises I grew up watching, and there's a lot of history there, and it's such a cool city, and just there's such a cool vibe around there when the team is doing well. But I look at what this team did in the offseason, Eric, and it seems to me that they've been very smart in how they've gone about trying to, I'm going to use the word, impose a little stability on this situation, right? With Waka and Lugo, I mean, they didn't go out and necessarily blow the doors off in free agency. But, man, I look at this team, and they've got a whole bunch of really stable guys at different positions, and it seems to be making a difference.
Yeah, those two you mentioned right there, Waka and Lugo, great additions right there. They're having great starts to the year. And what I love about it so much, especially following Kansas City and now being a supporter, a fan, all that, I feel like in the league you have teams that are either on the rebuild or teams that are trying to go for it. And to me, it seems like Kansas City's doing a little bit of both right now. They're going out, signing major league talent. You see the pitchers that they added on, a couple of bullpen additions. At the same time, they're trying to build up the farm system as well. So I love the moves that they're making because they are building for the future, but at the same time, trying to win ball games at the major league level. And I think we've gotten to a point in our league where that's truly not the case for every team.
How important is the clubhouse on a winning team? Maybe that's a stupid question. I've been in a ton of clubhouses, and obviously you have. I've never been on a winning clubhouse, though. Just one that sort of you show up, you understand that it's probably win day. Like, we're just used to, you know, it's a habit now. Is that, how do you get that, I think, on a team that you're talking about with Kansas City?
Yeah, to me, it's the culture. You know, when you create a culture in a clubhouse, from the clubbies in there to the video team to the players, you're really holding everyone accountable each and every day to do the best at their job that they can possibly do. So to me, when you're taking a battle of 162 games, nothing but failure, when you're taking that on as a team, you're taking it on together, you have the ability to go grab dinner after a rough night, talk about how bad you looked out there. When you can take that battle on with your teammates, to me, that's stronger than dealing with all this on an individual basis. The team's not having success. Everyone's kind of on their own program. When the game's over, they're getting out, doing their own thing. So the years that we had in Kansas City, it was truly like we were all taking this battle on together. We were all at the same parts of our contract. We were all trying to get paid, earn money, and win at the same time. So to me, that was something that truly did helped us win, helped us get through the good times and the bad times.
Eric, how do you think they find another Salvador Perez?
I mean, this guy has had an unbelievable career. Not only the numbers that he's put up on the field and what he's done, but the guy he is in that community, the guy he is in that locker room. To me, he sets the tone. He's won. He knows what winning looks like before. He knows what winning in Kansas City looks like before. So to me, as a young player, when you're going to that clubhouse and he is challenging you a certain way, there's no reason to not try and live up to that challenge because he checks all those boxes.
Now, one of your other teams is a team that we've spent a great deal of time talking about. One of us picked them to actually go to have a pretty good year this year and maybe go on a little bit of a postseason run, the San Diego Padres. Mm-hmm. What has to happen, Eric, for that team to reach, you know, the expectations I think they have for themselves?
Yeah, there's a lot of superstars over there. There's a lot of guys that can play the game. There's a lot of guys that have some very impressive resumes in this game. To me, when you look at the team as a whole, to get through that 162-game season, you need depth. There's no doubt about that. They do have those big, sexy names, position player side and pitching side. But the problem is you're going to run into some adversity throughout the course of the year. You need to have that depth. You need to have those guys that are up and down through AAA that can come up and make spot starts, quality guys that you can really count on. To me, it just seems like, especially last year when they had those injuries, there was a big dip in the talent production and the level of production that they were getting on both sides. So to me, you know, if they get to the postseason, that's a dangerous team, especially if they add on to the bullpen and add some key pieces there. But to get to that point, it takes the depth, it takes the roster that can take it. And I just don't know if they had that last year.
With Fernando Tatis Jr., you know, I don't think anybody argues about the athletic ability, like it's off the charts. But is there something you think that would take him to a whole different level? Because I think he's capable of being that whole different level. Is there something that you could point your finger at that you think would take him to that whole different level?
Yeah, and it's a tricky one because a guy like Toddy, you know, you really, really do want to start helping the development, helping the preparation. Is there certain things that you look at on the computer that can give you an edge versus the guy you're facing tonight or versus the bullpen guy you've had trouble with? To me, what's so dangerous about Fernando is I've always said, once he sees one pitcher's arsenal, from that point on, there's really no turning back. Once he sees your full arsenal, it's going to be hard to get him out. You're going to have to mix it up very good, very well. So to me, as he continues to develop, maybe there's some guys that he doesn't have as much success as he thought he would. Maybe he can start learning now how to break down certain things. And as approach, and from an approach wise, that becomes more advanced of, hey, I'm looking in a certain zone or I'm looking for a certain pitch rather than just going up there, see ball, hit ball. That's made him so successful up until this point. So I think that'll be something that once he catches on what he likes to add into his routine, we'll just keep seeing different levels of Fernando.
That's awesome.
Eric, your career kind of paralleled the increasing use of analytics in game preparation. And I'm wondering, what to you was the right balance between input from analytically inclined people versus input from dudes who played the game?
How do you say no?
Yeah, because we're kind of going through that with, well, we've been going through it in Toronto now for basically 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, analytics is a great tool. You use it as a tool. You don't live and die by it. I think a lot of teams now in the league have certainly gotten the approach of living and dying by analytics. At the end of the day, you got to watch the game. You got to let your eyes tell you what's happening. To me, when you start to use analytics, take Fernando, for instance. If you got Fernando, he's facing Blake Treinen out there in L.A., righty, heavy sinkers. Say you get 6 or 7 at-bats off of him that don't work out the way you go. Then you dive deeper into why we're not having success. And maybe at that point in time, analytically, something stands out and you can say, hey, Fernando, look, he's thrown the sinker to your back foot every single time. So let's now try and zone him a little more up and away from you. And that can maybe help your approach to do something. I think that's how you can use it as a tool. I certainly think we've gotten to a point in today's game where it's a live and die by approach. And to me, that's not the end all be all for it. I hate to bring this up, but you know, Toronto, when Berrios was out there in the playoffs looking good, I think analytically that third time through is when you pull them, and that's what people live and die by. But when you're watching the game and you're seeing how the guy's rolling and you understand you have to count on 4 or 5 more guys in the bullpen to be the way he is right now, that's when you let your eyes take over. As a manager, you trust what you're feeling and you continue to go with that.
Okay, I want to ask you a baseball question. I want to ask you about struggling as an entire lineup. Jays are going through that. They scored 6 runs last night. It's the first time they've done that in a long time. But consistently 1-9, there's a couple of guys occasionally that are going to get some hits and hit some balls hard, stay in the big part of the field. But consistently, it's been a struggle. Is there a blueprint? Is there something off the field when you went through it team-wide that can sort of speed up the process and make it, you know, go away quicker?
Yeah, to me, that's when you got to start playing baseball. You know, when baseball players, I'm sure you've heard it all the time, it's like, hey, the scoreboard is your book. The scoreboard will let you know certain situations, certain moves you got to make on the baseball field. And then on the course of a 162-game season, you're going to be swinging the bat. You're not going to be swinging the bat. So as an offense, you really got to identify, hey, we're not swinging it the way we should right now. You know, maybe JT and somebody else is, but the rest of the lineup isn't. So how do we produce runs, not just going up there trying to slug homers? Let's try and get one on the bases. Let's try and steal 90 feet any way we can. Let's try and set the table for a guy like JT who's hot right now. That's where the offense has to be willing to make an adjustment, be willing to identify what adjustment has to be made, not just go up there and say, I want to hit the ball at 28 degrees launch and try and hit homers as far as I can. You got to make certain adjustments.
Was there ever a time when you were trying to get paid that you went outside your box a little bit? Meaning, say, you know, you were an up the middle. Yeah, you were up the middle the other way guy, right? You wanted to add length to your swing. You wanted to create backspin. You don't get paid a lot to do that all the time, right? You try to, you know, party out front, create some backspin at the pool side, those kind of things. There's a couple of guys in the middle of the order for the Jays trying to do that. Is that hard to sort of have a bunch of different mindsets when you walk to the plate, right? First half of the season, I'm trying to party out front in 0-0, 1-0, 2-0 count. So that didn't work. Now I got to back off and try and fillet a ball to right field. Stay within yourself. Slow down your swing. All of those things, it's very hard to do. Did you go through that? And if you did, is it hard to get out of it and just basically be yourself again?
It definitely is. And for me, I think that's something I went through after I ended up signing my contract. When I got to San Diego, you know, that's where I was introduced to analytics and what analytics are. And the analytics said, as a hitter, to be successful, you got to get the ball in the air to the pool side. That is how you will be successful in this league. So to me, trying to get the ball in the air, trying to get the ball to the pool side, I truly believe ended up taking away from my ability to go to the opposite field, my ability to stay through a baseball. You know, I had more of a flatter swing. So that's going to create line drives. That's going to create the other way. Then trying to create that lift and try and create that Ferris wheel type, so to swing or so to say, I think dug it a little deeper as far as the problems for me. But to your point, once you do that, once you commit on trying to make those moves, it's certainly hard trying to go back to your natural self. So I think that's something that is a battle with today's game, especially with hitters, because you're fighting these new age analytical stats that are getting you paid. But at the same time, you've done something one way as a hitter up until this point. So it's like, do I change? Do I try and stay to myself? It's a very hard question to ask for the current player.
Yeah.
Eric, when I say 2015 ALCS, I mean, I know what that means to a lot of people in this city, and I can hear cars bouncing off the concrete embankments of the Gardner right now. What does that mean to you, though? What comes to mind?
I know you guys don't like to see that, but yeah. I tell you what, one thing that I really, really do credit for that series was the last week of the season, it came down to us and the Jays having a home court, home field advantage, being that number one seed to have that home field advantage. And I truly believe that was a big factor in our series against Toronto, because if we were to face that team at the Rogers Center for four games instead of three, I think it's a much different story. I think it's a much favorable matchup for them. So I think us being able to host that and have those games in Kansas City certainly helped us out.
Were they a pain in the ass to play against the Jays? I mean, there was an edge to them. We saw it. I'm wondering, as a competitor, did you guys kind of look at Jose Bautista and Donald? I mean, Donaldson would drive me nuts, and he was a friend. as a competitor, I've got to think it would be even more the case.
Yeah, a lot of guys on that side where it's, if you're playing against them, you do not like and support what they're doing. But when you play with them, you love everything about them. And to me, Stroman's one of those guys that playing against him in big, huge games, seeing what he's doing on the mound, you tend not to like that being on the other side. Then I play with him in the World Baseball Classic in Chicago last year, and a complete 180, just all about what he's doing, and no other guy that you would rather have on the ball, on the bump, defending with the ball.
You know, Eric, I had a sort of a thing whenever I was finished with baseball. It was a little bit of a regret that I was just not better with the media. Like, I just didn't either want to talk to them or really didn't know how to talk to them. Now that you're in the media, if you talk to a young guy, what would you tell them about the media? Is it important to be friendly with the media? You know, do you use the media to your advantage? What would be your advice to a young person coming up in baseball?
Yeah, I think you certainly have a due diligence in responding to media pregame, postgame, speaking about the game on what's happening, speaking about a big play that went down, something like that, something that way. I think what we're running into now is a lot of media that is younger, trying to make a name for themselves. So they are certainly trying to make big headlines. They're trying to create a little controversy to get clicks and to do that thing their way. So that's something that you certainly have to balance. But as a player, you have certain members of the media that you see every day, that travel with the team, that cover the team, that have a job to do as well as you do. So I think that as a young player, those people that you certainly know cover the team and are there on a day-to-day basis, you have to show them the same respect because they have a job to do as well.
Yeah.
Eric, really good of you to join us, man. Yeah. Thanks so much. Congratulations on the podcast, and we look forward doing this again. Thanks, man.
Eric.
Be well.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
See
you
later. Thank you.
Eric Hosmer joining us.
That's
awesome. Blair and Barker. The podcast is Digging Deep. You can follow him on Twitter at The Real Hoss 305.
Yeah.
John Gibbons loved when he was coach. Loved Eric Hosmer.
Yeah, what's not to like? Like he's
he was such a good he was such interesting hearing him talk about his swing and the approach, you know, looking at what Bo's gone through.
And Vladdy.
But he was such a good first baseman. He was
footwork and how it made it just when the ball was in his radius, he's catching it. Like he's sort of Lyle Overbay. Like that, those are the guys, right?
Yeah, it's a good comp.
You know, before the shift and all those things where, you know, you sort of eliminated the good defending first baseman to where they were fielding their position, meaning they could take away that hole between first and second because, you know, where they're positioned and, you know, first moves to the bag and being comfortable turning your back on a ball that's hitting the infield to where, you know, that timing of when you turn around because of your footwork has to be on point so you can catch the ball, right? Because you're just so comfortable doing it. He was one of the best at it. And I used to watch video. I used to watch him play. I used to watch Lyle Overbay play because I took pride in my defense.
I always smile when I think of Overbay because, you know, he was
He is one of the best defensive first basemen I've ever seen.
He was always the closest guy to the second baseman, right? That was, you know, before the shift was hot and heavy, and you were sticking the shortstop between the two defenders, sort of eliminating the first baseman and all of that. That was when you needed that really comfortable defending first baseman who, you know, was okay going to his right. It's very uncomfortable going to your right as a first baseman because you lose track of how far away you are from the bag.
Your first instinct as a first baseman is usually to your left to find the bag.
It's not the easiest thing to do. So, you know, those guys were really good at it, and I think they took pride in it. And, you know, you can help win some baseball games by just making a play or two late in a game by taking away that hole.
Save some errors, pitches as well.
I just think it's intriguing listening to him talk about trying to get paid. And what a khaki's telling you and what will work. I mean, it's common sense that you will get paid pulling the ball in the air. But what if you can't?
But this is the classic – this is kind of the classic baseball thing. Is it better to, quote-unquote, keep a guy hungry, which I've never bought into that, or reward a guy early in his career, and now that you've committed to him – human nature to me would be – if I'm in a 7-year contract and an organization's giving me a lot of money and they want me to do this here, do this, do that, I'm going to be more open to it because I'm getting, if I'd agreed to a contract, chances are pretty good that I'm happy with what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And I just think sometimes this whole thing, keep them hungry and go year to year and boy, they're going to have to play to be paid. At some point, I think you look at players, you say, you're my guy. Hey, we drafted you, we developed you, we did the learning curve with you. And I know where this is going. This is going to go into Vladdy and Bo, but I just think, I think there's so much to be said for locking up a guy long-term. And you know what? Sometimes it isn't going to work, but it's remarkable how often it does work.
Yeah, you have such a small window to get paid. Like, you're only going to play for so long. If you're lucky like Eric and you play 13 seasons, like, that's outside the norm. You only got a small window of how many deals you're going to get. And, you know, again, I ask you the question. I think the answer to my question is yes. Do you think if they would have taken away 2 or 3 years of arbitration from Vladdy, like eliminated those and just said, we'll give you a 3-year deal, whatever that number is, 20 a year.
Yeah.
Say a 3-year deal at $60 million. Think he's better than he is now? Whatever that number is.
Yeah, whatever the number is.
Whatever the number
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
I do too. I could not agree more. I've had absolutely numerous conversations with him and people that are around him. He is searching and trying to find a way to get paid. And for me, it's showing.
Like, and people
are going to
say
on an everyday basis.
I understand. I can hear people right now saying, okay, come on. I mean, the guy's making this much money. It's not like he's being paid a pauper's wages. That's not the point. In this game, your value is shown to you by how much your employers are willing to pay you.
Yeah. Remember when Bo got the 3-year deal and he said it's nice to be wanted. It's nice to be the everyday shortstop for the Toronto Blue Jays. We were talking about moving him to second.
Because
they paid him.
I remember Bo saying, and it's so true, and I remember him saying, you know what? In life, it's generally a good thing to remove obstacles, to remove things that can create, and I'm paraphrasing here, but things that can create negativity. I'm with you. And the way the game is now, it gets to a point where it doesn't make sense for either side to make that commitment.
It doesn't anymore with the Vladdy thing, but
no,
it's a shame. I would have loved to have seen how it would look if they had done it.
My question is,
they're together. Let's see.
My question is now, let's say this. We don't know if Vladdy would agree to the same type of deal that Bo did. We don't know. We don't know. But I'm saying if that was out there, I'm with you. I would.
Takes two to tango, Jeff.
Sure does, and I think it probably would have made a difference. David Sampson, Ben Shulman will join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top.
top stories in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I'll tell you what.
You're not being a great leader today.
The complete and total lack of respect around here is absolutely
now shocking.
Now be truthful.
Shocking.
Sometimes you bring it on yourself.
I did not in this case.
You did.
He asked a very simple question, and I got...
You ask it rudely.
I did not ask rudely. I didn't,
be nice how you ask.
I didn't use that word. And I asked it politely.
Not a chance.
I did.
You did not.
I did not use the word that sometimes creeps into my vocabulary.
You got the number one sign from our producer, and...
He's getting a little too big for his britches.
He's a good dude. He does a good job.
He does
dealing
a good
with
job.
You every day. I just won't do it.
David Sampson's host of Nothing Personal, the podcast. He will join us later on in the show. Unless I decide he won't.
Wow! Put your foot down.
7:07 is the first pitch tonight. Cole Reagans. For Barker's Royals. Jose Berríos for the Blue Jays. Reminder, tomorrow's an afternoon game. Seth Lugo against Chris Bassitt. We'll be on after the game on TV and radio with Blue Jays talk. Mm. So you can leave questions for us on the back leg line at 416-413-3959. Don't do it now because the game hasn't been played yet. But do it tomorrow when the game's being played, and then we'll get to them. Please leave your name and location. Don't just say province, like Dave in Alberta.
Gosh, you're awfully bossy.
No,
let's be happy they're calling in.
Leave. Tell me whereabouts you're.
Guys, say whatever you want to say.
Half the people are lying anyhow. They're telling you.
Why would they leave their real name?
Yeah, that's true.
Would you?
No. All kidding aside, I would definitely leave my real name and location.
Which is a great caller.
I would actually leave my name and location because you never know. There may be a prize.
Yeah,
we may decide at some point that we have a prize.
1407.
We may have a prize for caller of the day or something. You never know.
A prize.
You never know.
I think they know.
You never know.
There's no prize.
We may pick a call of the day. We just don't know how things.
Who's we?
Sometimes things happen.
Buffa?
Sometimes things happen. Ben Shulman will join us in a few minutes. He is the. He's the Blue Jays play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590 Fan, which he is, but he's also on TV alongside
Joseph.
He did a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Smith had the call on the radio, and I thought he was, that's no surprise. He's a professional anyhow.
They sounded surprised when they scored 6 runs.
Well, everybody did. Everybody did.
Only a matter of time, Jeff.
Yeah.
They weren't going to go the rest of the year without scoring 6 runs.
21 games or 20 games or whatever it was is a long time to go between scoring.
What did you take? One thing you took away from the lineup last night was what?
One thing?
One thing. Not three things. One thing.
The same thing we talked about. Davis Schneider has to play every day for me.
That's the one thing you took away?
In terms of individual player, yeah. You confused me on Blue Jays talk last night. Because I came, which is not unusual, especially late at night. It's before the bourbon kicks in.
Yeah, so. It's warm milk and chocolate chip cookies.
I don't do warm milk at night. I'm not that old. But you talked about, I came on and talked about what a great game Vladdy had, great approach, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of poo-pooed it and said that you still didn't like his mechanics. He's late.
That's what I've been trying to tell you and everybody that wants to listen. His talent is
so good that even when he's late, he can still hit a ball.
He took 97 from a righty throwing three-quarter angle with some sank in on the black, cleared the hips, pulled the hands in, didn't pull it foul, hit a frozen rope to left center field. The left fielder took 2 steps. It was bouncing off the wall already. Don't do that.
You thought it was
That's the point. It's just the consistency.
What did you
getting
take
him to do that?
What did you take
what
away?
What if he's on time all the time?
What did you take away from
that? If they sort of have the one guy that's been there, done it before. Everybody else will fill in the blanks. I think they need one guy. That's a Turner. Lame. That's a Vladdy. That's a Bobichet. You know, George Springer. Not real sure, but they. It's almost like it just sort of the one person. One person, and then everybody else, just the at-bats seem to get way better. It's just not everybody else sees their buddy not doing it. They try to go to the plate and do it, and whether they're sometimes not capable of doing that or they're just in between and having trouble doing it.
Justin Turner hits two home runs. Does that make Vladdy feel better when he's at the plate?
Takes the load off.
I'm just telling you.
If you let me, I'm telling you. He's not going up there thinking that every single at-bat is all on his shoulders. Now he can go up there and, dare I say, see ball, hit ball, which some people, you know, have to simplify that much. I just think it looked to me easier. Is that a fair statement or no?
Easier for Vladdy?
No, just the lineup as a whole.
Yeah. IKF's
having good at-bats. Danny Jansen in the lineup. Lineup just looks different.
Yeah.
You got to make a pitch to get a dude out.
It looks better, yeah. And, you know, that could have been a 6-2 or 6-3 game. And it was 6-5. I am saying it looked a lot better.
They got six runs.
It looked a lot better. I'm admitting. I'm saying it.
They have something to build off of, which is every – look, you can't stink forever. You got to have something to build off of. Vladdy can do that. Turner can do that. You know, Turner, last whatever handful of games, don't like the ball up. Last night, he hit the ball up. You want to know why? He was on time. Mm. You're on time because you've done it. You've been there. You feed off of that and you continue to do it. So hopefully he does that forever.
Speaking of time, 7:07 will be the first pitch tonight at the Rogers Center. Ben Shulman will have the call on the TV side. He joins us on Blair and Barker. Ben, thank you so much for doing this. First of all, I know you don't need to hear this because you did some TV in spring training, but fine job last night, my friend. Fine job. Not that I'm surprised.
What's the difference between TV, since we have you and Jeff asked that question? Biggest difference between TV and radio for you is what?
Oh, it's got to be your radio color guy's better looking, right? Like Chris LaRue, let's face it. LaRue's like a model, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would say that they're all handsome, all the guys that I happen to work with. They definitely don't make me look good. But other than the tighter clothes, you know, we get to have a little bit more played out discussions, I think, on TV as opposed to on radio where, you know, our big job is informing people of what they don't see. So, you know, Joe and I dive into things like guys specific swings or the way certain pitches are being used just in a way that you're restricted on radio. And, you know, it's fun. I love doing both of them. It was a thrill to do TV last night, and it's exciting to do it again. Hopefully another good game.
I asked Jeff about his one takeaway from the lineup. He gave me a terrible answer, so I want your answer. What was the one takeaway that you had when you were in your car on your way home about the lineup last night?
They hit some tough pitches, I think, and some tough fastballs in general that I don't think they were hitting before. You were talking about the Turner homer, the second one, which was on the fastball up and in. And Vlad, I think it was his double in the sixth inning, came off like an inside fastball. I could be wrong. That might have been his single in the eighth. But
97.
You know, those are pitches that I don't think they had gotten around on a ton over the last couple of weeks. So to get on those, you know, good hitters and good teams are going to hit fastballs well. And that's what they did yesterday. And I think that it really worked out and it turned into a ton of extra base hits.
Great answer.
Where do you think they are with Yariel Rodriguez?
I think he faced some tough luck yesterday. I think they're still pretty confident in him. I think, you know, we all looked at that first inning and probably thought, he should have gotten out of that without a run allowed, more than likely. I mean, two ground balls in the infield turn into two hits with two outs and end up scoring two runs. So I think that they like what he's offering him right now. It's obviously a bit more difficult without Francis, but there does seem to be in the background still, obviously, this innings limit. And what do you do about that? And, you know, Alek Manoah is facing Paul Skeens tonight in Buffalo. And I think that everyone's keeping an eye on that because they can't start Rodriguez the whole season. So if they can get through this period where he is a starter for them and then get someone else in that spot and move him to the bullpen, I mean, that gets really fun, I think, when you start to look at what the bullpen could be with him, with Chad Green potentially back in it and healthy, and with everyone at full go.
The pitching staff last night gave up two homers. They've allowed the second most home runs with 40 on the season. The relievers are tied for first, giving up 19. That's with the Rays.
Tied for the most.
Do you think they care? Like, is that a big deal? Or is it early? You know, we talk about the hitters and the cold, and it's early, and mechanics and timing and all those things. Do you think Pete Walker, John Snyder, Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro cares about those two stats I just handed out?
I think they do. I think they're more focused on runs allowed than home runs. If they happen to be home runs, you know, that's not great. But this was a pitching staff last year, not, you know, maybe not second last in the league or anything like that. But the starters gave up a lot of home runs last year, and by and large were really good. I think they're most worried about run prevention. If it's a double and a single or a homer, I think they aren't hugely, just from what I've heard, you know, caring either way. But they did, you know, the bullpen was not phenomenal yesterday by any means, but they did get through a tight game without Romano and Garcia. And I think that is a win for them overall. But certainly, you know, it'd be nice to keep the ball in the yard a little bit more, because that game could have been a bit more comfortable, and it wasn't because of Kyle Isbell's home run and then Freddie Fermin's home run.
Ben, if you meet a new Jays fan and the first player they ask you about is Nate Pearson, how do you explain him?
About as much potential as you'll find in the pitching staff. You know, obviously had to deal with lots of health issues early on in his career, has transition roles, and I think, you know, at times has shown an ability to be a guy that you could put in big situations. Yesterday did get a little bit shaky for him overall, but, you know, he did come up with the save, and I think he deserves credit for that. So I think I'd say to them that it's a high ceiling. He just hasn't been consistent to that point yet. But yesterday, I still think was a step forward, even with some traffic from the Garcia and Perez hits.
Davis Schneider, no surprises in the lineup tonight, batting fifth. Mm-hmm. Kevin and I had this discussion.
Awesome.
Actually, I'm going to credit Kevin. He kind of started it a couple of games ago, actually, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, as I normally do, just didn't pay attention to it. But it's become pretty clear that Davis Schneider's made a case for an everyday spot in the lineup, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing almost every day, I think, at this point. I think it's gone from put Schneider in just really good matchups to only take him out if it's a really bad matchup. I still think that they're not going to always put him in against a guy who's, you know, huge, big extension, high, you know, spin fastball, loves to go top of the zone. I still think they'll try and move him out of those spots time to time. But if it's kind of a wash, if the guy, you know, throws 95, not 97, if he mixes it around, I think that Schneider's more than earned, you know, the right to get into the lineup at that point in time. And they, you know, really benefited from that yesterday. He's been really hot over the last 7-8 games. And they have, you know, he has fared fine in left field, but they have a lot of really good defenders out there. Mm-hmm. I think that they were searching more for, you know, can we get some more impactful bats in the lineup? And Schneider certainly is one of those. And it was kind of nice yesterday even to see him hit a couple singles, because as much as I love the extra base power and you want the big swings and the Blue Jays need that, to be able sometimes to just line one out to left field, to put a ball into right when it's not a pitch that you can drive that effectively, I think helps him stay in the lineup, because mm-hmm. he can be a little more consistent on those days where he doesn't get a hanging slider.
Yeah, to your point, he's facing Duffy, right? He lets the ball travel. He stays inside the baseball. He hits a single to right. Like, it's, you know, you can't take the big daddy hack all the time. But speaking of big daddy hacks, you think they are worried about George Springer leading off?
Everything they say would say no, because you know, they did move him briefly last year, but they've held him in that one spot the whole time. I think that they have a lot of faith that things are going to turn around. They like his ability to spoil pitches sometimes at the top and put up a good at bat. He also, you know, tends to talk to a lot of guys about what he's seeing and what's going on. So at this point, I would say that they're still going to keep George up there for the foreseeable future, but you never know. I mean, if they're still scoring 3.5 runs a game a month from now, they might be changing a lot of things, because that's not enough, clearly.
Yep.
Ben, we're going to let you scoot, mm-hmm. my friend. Thanks so much for doing this. Look forward to your call tonight.
See you, buddy.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a good one.
Be well. That's Ben Shulman. Hell of a call tonight, along with Joe Siddle. I was just kidding about it. I mean, Joe Siddle's a good-looking dude, too. He's got the good tan. Right. LaRue is.
Well, I wouldn't tell him.
He's got that kind of California thing happening.
He's pretty. He's a good talker, too.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Springer, Guerrero, Bichette. Yes, Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, Schneider, Kirk, Clement, IKF, Biggio in right field. That is the lineup for the Blue Jays. Pardon me. Barrios on the mound for the Jays. So no Dalton Varsho against Cole Reagans.
Yeah, main lefty throwing a bazillion miles an hour. You know, sometimes guys need a break. Who'd you say is playing center?
Your guy, George Springer.
That's different. I know they were having conversations about him playing center just because they could get the different kind of lineups, and I think they sometimes want to give Dalton some rest, a break. Right? He does a lot of things when he's not hitting to help a team win a baseball game. So
it's a little surprising, I guess, for me because Kiermaier's out. You do take a little bit away from your outfield, from your outfield defense. Although, quite frankly, I don't have a problem necessarily with Biggio in right field and Turner and Schneider in left. But that is a little surprising.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to put Kevin. I mean, Kevin's a good right fielder. Like, he gets good jumps. He runs good routes.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm still kind of surprised to see Springer
some
in
lefties.
Center.
There's some left. There'll be some lefties in the lineup for Kansas City, The ball is hit to right a little bit more than it's hit to left.
That's right.
Righties, right? Jose is going to be glove side a ton, right? That slurve away, that two-seamer away, that front hip two-seamer left. He's like, the right fielder's a big deal. You want righty and lefty or righty and center field to be sort of playing hand-in-hand, those kind of things. I like Kevin defensively. He does some things. I mean, he's not going to hurt your team anywhere he's playing. So, he'll give you a bat against that lefty. That lefty's not an easy get, boy.
He's filthy.
Wow.
He is...
give you nightmares. That's what that is going to give you. Like, that is, you got to be aggressive and be aggressive. Yeah, be aggressive.
I haven't seen the Royals lineup yet, but I'm sure you're right. Springer leading off. We've had this discussion often. What is realistic for George Springer right now?
Kevin? Yeah, I want to be fair. I want to be respectful to George Springer.
Yeah, but I...
his career and those kind of things.
What is realistic? You know, what should...
I'm not... That's a great question. I mean, if he hits 20 homers, I think you got to... I don't think you can set the bar too high. You can't be asking him to do the things that you're asking Bo and Vladdy to do. You think right now he's capable offensively of doing that? I mean, maybe it's just going through one of those things where, you know, the bat's dragging a little bit. I've always been under the impression, even when he was really good and he had some really good years, I think it's 17 and 19, he had some really good seasons where he's hitting 30 homers. You know, the slider bat speed, I don't think he's always had tremendous bat speed. It's been some solid approaches. It's been some educated guesses. You know, it's been using the Crawford box. Like, he's been able to do that on certain counts, certain pitches, to make up for, you know, the lack of bat speed. That's my opinion. Like, the things that I've seen him when I've seen him, that's not taking anything away from him.
No, it's not. It's not at all.
Unbelievable career. I just don't know what the expectations are from George Springer. Is it that he's going to hit velocity consistently? I just don't think that's it. I think he's made a tiny little approach adjustment by trying to lay off the fastball in. He no likey. For whatever reason that is. So, you know, you got to, when it ain't working, you're getting jammed. There's only so many thumbs you got to lose. you only got two of them. So, I've often, Jeff, this is just me. When you're going not so well, I've often, you know, ran by that bat boy and asked him to run out there and get my thumb. I think it just... Sometimes. So, you know,
I don't know, but I guess that,
I don't know. What you want me to say? Hit him ninth? I don't know what that. John Snyder said the exact right thing to say. They will pitch him the exact same way
wherever you
if
put
he's
him.
Hitting third, fifth, seventh, ninth.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah.
We saw that last year when he moved. I just it's not that it's an unfair question, but I don't know where else. I don't know where else you'd put him, and I don't know what are your other options at the top of the
maybe
order.
Maybe giving him a break occasionally would. You know, I think they're trying to do that.
Maybe.
That, you know, get him on a decent little program when it comes to that. I mean, his defense and right is off the charts. Like, his jumps and, look, he wants the ball, which defensively, you know, it's like running the bases. A good base runner wants to run the bases. Yeah. Like, you know, obviously, by watching, I don't have to say their names, who don't want to be running the bases. Yeah, and then you know guys who want to run them. And him in the outfield, boy, he wants the ball hit to him. See, like, he can't wait to run and get it.
And that doesn't,
which is awesome.
That doesn't surprise me because, you know, I keep thinking back to a conversation we had with Jeff Blum when the Jays signed George Springer. And Blum, who's the Houston Astros radio analyst, said, and I said at the time, people laugh, but I said at the time that eventually George Springer was going to move to right field.
Yeah.
It was no surprise. And Blum's point was, oh, yeah, and he's a better – this is Jeff Blum talking, mm-hmm. who's seen him a lot, said, I think he's a better right fielder than he is a center fielder.
Yeah, and then Boris came out and said that he is a better right fielder than he is center fielder. Look, I don't
know. I think he is. I love him in right – listen, I have – you know, we joke about run prevention, it's boring, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. But if this is the way this team is going to win games, I have no problem with Springer, Varsho, and whoever's in left, or Springer, Kiermaier, and Varsho. That is a strength. Like, I have come to realize, watching that game against the Dodgers in mm-hmm. particular, they won that game because of outfield defense.
No question.
They won that game because of outfield
defense. There's not too many outfields that want the ball. Well, no matter where that thing's hit, they're going to get it. And the outfield now for the Blue Jays is... they are gung-ho, and they take pride in that. Like, the jumps, Mark Budzinski, you know, don't get a ton of credit, and we don't even say his name. It's rare that we say the first base coach's name. But he takes care of the outfield and positioning and just the education of before the game starts of where you're standing and not always having to look in the dugout and, you know, have Mark sort of put you where you need to stand and just be prepared.
Yeah.
And they want it. Like, the routes and the, you know, just the shoulder turns and the – first moves and knowing where the warning track is, just everything that goes into being a really good defender in the outfield, they all know it, and it's a lot of fun to watch.
Let me ask you this. Kiermaier's
really good, too, when he's healthy. Boy, he's
let me ask
really
you this.
Good.
Do you think – I actually – I'm
and they root for each other, which is cool, too. Like, they're basically saying, you got it, you got it, you got it, even if they don't get it,
yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
I'm going to ask you to go out on a limb here. And then I'm going to saw it off behind you because I can, because I'm the host. Do you think?
No.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Do you think we may feel differently about the Varsho trade at the end of this year than we do right now?
Does it help that the Diamondbacks are 13-19 or something?
I'm asking you to look ahead. And I mean,
if Danny Jansen stays on the field and they can use Alejandro Kirk the way they want to use him, the catching situation will take care of itself.
Right. Defensively, you're not going to match Moreno. That's never going to be a wash.
Yeah.
But offensively?
Well, that's where it's at, right?
It comes down to Varsho and Lourdes. I'm just asking a question.
Lourdes is a legitimate 300 hitter who can hit good pitching.
Mm. What would have to happen?
They make the playoffs and win a series.
What would have to happen
they
for Jays to
they make
feel
the
better?
Playoffs and
what
win a series?
What if they make the playoffs and the Diamondbacks don't? Does that matter?
I think to some fans it does. I think if those two don't have good seasons for the Diamondbacks and Dalton sort of turns the corner and starts looking like he, you know, has a clue at the plate. I mean, I can't say that any nicer, and I'm sure Dalton would say the same. Say it the same way.
Look the
which
way
he
he's
does.
Looked so far.
No, absolutely. No question. So I think consistently, not just do it, you know, a couple of weeks at a time, consistently do it. He's going to have some bumps, but, you know, make up for it. Make the bumps smaller, not such so big bumps. I think so. Yeah.
This is the last day of April. 30 days past September. Yep, last day of April. Before we break, your biggest surprise in April for the Blue Jays and your biggest disappointment? Can be player, can be thing.
Yeah, my biggest disappointment is Vladdy. I just don't get it. I never will get it. It's a pretty big sample of you being late. Man, I know I beat this to death. I have never talked to an offensive player that's legit. And I talked to a lot of them. That I mention Vladdy's name and they don't go, man, that is just oozing. It's just putting it together and maybe not being so stubborn. And maybe the stubborn part is organizational-wide. It's like sometimes it's just right in front of you and you just don't want to point your finger at it. That's very disappointing to me. So that's mine.
Yeah.
But the
pleasant surprise,
I think it's Dalton offensively. Barrios making a step forward. That's not surprising. I think we all knew he could do that. It's just he's refined. He's bought into what they're selling and he's going out there and executing it, which is he's smart. And he's athletic, and he's really good.
Yeah.
Like, those three things add up to what Jose is turning out to be. I think it's Dalton offensively. Listening to his dad talk on our show, listening to the way he talks, the way he's not afraid to take criticism, which is a art. You know that better than anybody. I'm talking about the way you know. Hold on. I meant this by the way you cover players.
I know.
And the way sometimes you have to badmouth a player. Boom. And it's not the easiest thing to do or hear. I went through it, you know. Look, I'm here. I heard announcers for the Brewers.
Bob Uecker.
Basically saying I was the worst draft the Brewers ever had.
And your mother took up for you.
Yeah, of course. She's just my mom. Good for her. I know he didn't ever read
Bob Uecker. What's he ever done?
Is he funny?
I mean, I think he's funny. But anyhow, that's beside the
anyway,
point.
Yeah, I think those are my two. I think it's – I just don't get the Vladdy thing. I never have and I never will because I don't just see it. I don't ever see it change. If it hasn't changed yet, it ain't going to change. And I think sometimes you got to give Dalton credit and give kudos to Dalton. He has turned it around.
David Sampson is host of Nothing Personal, the podcast with David Sampson. He's also a former MLB executive with the Marlins
in a while. Good job. It's rare.
David Sampson. Be quiet. David Sampson joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sport. You're awful. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan of Sportsnet. Barker doesn't know about the Minnesota Twins home run sausage.
Wow.
You'll just have to do some reading, my friend.
Is it cool?
It's a sausage.
Do they wear it when they hit a homer?
7:07 will be the first pitch tonight as the Jays and the Kansas City Royals play the second of a three-game series. The Jays 6-5 winners last night. First time in 21 games they've scored six runs.
No fun in baseball, Jeff. You know better than that.
Cole Reagan's against Jose Barrios tonight, 7:07. A reminder, tomorrow's an afternoon game. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk immediately following the game on radio and TV. 416-413-3959 is the back leg line. Why are you telling us this, Jeff? Well, that's because that is the phone number you're going to call during the game and leave comments, name and location. And we'll get to those comments as part of our post-game show.
You nailed it.
Bringing David Sampson, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, former MLB executive. Hello, David.
How are you doing today?
I am doing well. Hey, I'm going to give you a chance to plug Nothing Personal a little bit here.
Mm.
From following you on social media, I can tell you're on a tour of various wine establishments. Are you not around the United States? I'm kind of jealous when I go online and there's David at a winery in Pennsylvania, or tell us a little bit about this tour.
So Nothing Personal is on a live tour and it had its sixth and final show of this leg. And I'm so glad you mentioned it. I was able to go to city wineries in Nashville and Pittsburgh and Atlanta and Boston and New York last night and Philadelphia. And it's been great bringing shows out to people and doing live shows. It's exhilarating. It's interesting. It builds great loyalty and it's great fun. And we're working on the second leg of the tour for this summer. And we've got Chicago and St. Louis. And I'm thinking about Toronto.
Oh, you should.
Because I miss you guys. All we do is Zoom. And I would love to come there and be in the studio with you and do a live Nothing Personal from somewhere in Toronto, because there's a lot, believe it or not, Jeff, this must shock you given how we first met 25 years ago. But there's a big audience of Nothing Personal in Toronto.
Oh, I believe awesome. It. I'm not certain your Montreal audience is huge, but that's just...
Oh, I think it's funny. I was asked that by the promoter, would I consider Montreal?
Yeah.
And I said, of course I would. Remember, you just don't want apathy.
Yes,
everything
that's true.
Else is fine.
That is true. That is true. Well, let us know how it goes, because absolutely. Yeah. We'd
love to have you.
We would absolutely yeah. love to have you here. I'm going to throw this right in your wheelhouse. I do want to talk about the Oakland Athletics, because I'm growing more and more confused as to whether or not the Athletics are actually closer to Vegas or farther away from Vegas. But I do want to ask you about the Miami Marlins, who aren't very good right now. And, you know, the one thing they did have, young pitching, they seem to be getting hurt. And certainly they're not the only organization that is experiencing that. But how close is that situation, David, to becoming really, really, really serious?
Well, it depends your definition of serious. But if you're basing it on how worried is Major League Baseball, they're very worried. I think if you ask them in a moment of pure, pure honesty, they would tell you that the Marlins franchise concerns them the most of any of the franchises in baseball.
Really? Even more?
A's.
Really?
And the reason is that with the A's, there's always hope, because you can get a ballpark somewhere, whether it's Oakland or Vegas or wherever it may be. There's the possibility of it turning around. With the Marlins, they're in that ballpark, and we've just never been able to draw. John Henry couldn't. Huizenga couldn't. Loria couldn't. We couldn't. Bruce Sherman and Derek Jeter couldn't. And you can say it's because there hasn't been enough winning, but the Marlins made the playoffs last year. And then you could say, well, they didn't invest in their payroll enough, but they've signed some players. Some worked out, some didn't. And it's just been very hard to draw there. And the TV situation is a real problem, where you don't know what your contractually obligated revenue is going to be year after year. And teams count on that in order to sign players to long-term deals. And there's a bunch of teams right now with the regional sports network issue that just don't know what their future is in TV broadcast revenue. And that's a huge piece of the pie.
You know, it's funny hearing you say this, when Whitey Herzog just passed away recently. And I remember talking to Whitey in spring training. We used to go to St. Petersburg and cover Cardinal spring training and do a tour when you were covering the Expos. And I can remember, I don't remember when it was, but I remember sitting in his office, and it was one of those days where there were a lot of national writers around, and people started talking about, could he ever see baseball in a Major League Baseball team in Florida on a full-time basis? And he said, I just don't think it would work in Miami or St. Pete, because there's just too much to do. And I've always kind of remembered, just in the back of my mind, he said, I just don't think it would work.
Listen, Jeff, there's a lot to do in Toronto and New York as well. So that's a funny, I think it's a different reason. Bud Selig really wanted baseball in Florida because it had worked so well for spring training. He thought this is perfect for expansion. And you remember how Tampa started. Yeah. Tampa was the stalking horse city for the White Sox, the Giants, and then they got their own expansion team. And I worry that Vegas is going to be like Tampa, where it's a great stalking horse, but a team doesn't actually succeed there, and you're trading one problem for another. But the reality is that in Miami, what I found when I moved there is there's no corporate sponsorship base, and all of the wealthy people aren't there during the summer. So it looks like there's great demographics. It looks like your DMA is high in terms of TV revenue and what could be premium season ticket revenue. But it turns out they're not around. They're in Connecticut or Toronto or Montreal when it comes summertime. So I think the season of baseball is a problem in Florida.
David, how does a front office know when to punt on a season?
That's such a good question. The answer is they don't.
No.
They say they do. And here, let me go through better the evaluation process. When you're in spring training, there's 3 points where you evaluate your team. One is in the offseason when you're putting your team together. Two is in spring training when your team is put together. And then three is anywhere from April 15 to June 15. And what that latter period is for is to decide whether you were right in how you valued your team both during the offseason and during the spring. And the best front offices are able to differentiate between performance that is fantasy and sustainable versus performance that is, we don't know. So what do I mean? Fantasy is when you're playing really badly, but you think you're a good team, so you hang on. When you are overperforming what you thought, the question is this just a moment or can we actually do this? When you're underperforming, can we turn the lights on? And Toronto's been through this. I went through this in Miami. We thought we had a good team. They're playing terribly. Don't worry, we're going to be fine. And then before you know it, you're in September and it never clicked. And that's the hardest thing for a front office to figure out. And that's what all front offices are doing as we speak.
Did you ever use that as an excuse to get rid of a good player that you were on the fence on whether you wanted to get rid of him or not?
You know, it's funny. Our owner always wanted to be a buyer. He always thought we were in it. And we would always budget money to make acquisitions at the deadline. And one of the reasons why we were mediocre for so long is we bought when we should have sold. And we traded away a bunch of good young players for the thought that, hey, we're going to turn it on. It's going to click. Because it happened in 03 and it clicked and we won a ring. But it never happened again over the next 14 years. So the answer is that you don't really know. You need an owner to have conviction in allowing his baseball people to not be emotional. And I wonder whether Toronto's in a great situation because of that, where you can rely on the front office in a way that most individual owners generally don't rely on their front office.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing you say that, because to me, the biggest change, a lot of things have changed since I've been covering the game. But the one thing that is really, really noticeable is there's not as much emotion in it as there used to be, right? I mean, the famous story of, was it Scott Boras basically going around David Dombrowski's back to talk to the owner to get Prince Fielder done? I mean, there's, or some of the moves made at a deadline. There's just not that much emotion left in the game anymore. And I, as a fan, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. But as a realist, that's kind of the way it should be, isn't it?
It's one of the tangential effects of analytics. It removes the emotion when you have numbers in front of you. And so I'm not a big analytics guy. I like it as part of an arrow in my quiver where I can look at that. But I like also feeling the pulse of the team or trying to convince the owner of what I think is happening, working in conjunction with the GM. But a lot of owners right now, when they're presented with what they see on paper, they just go with it. And that, you know, you say it's the removing emotion. Some people would argue it's removing fantasy.
When you were underperforming as an organization, did you talk more or less as a front office?
I always talked more, because I was the guy who went into the clubhouse only when we lost, because our owner would only go in when we won. And players noticed that. So when we won games, I would generally stay out of the clubhouse, or I'd go to the manager's office and then leave. But for losses, I do a lap in the locker room, you know, a quick pat on the tuchus, and then say, see you tomorrow. Because I think that players want to know that you are there. And for the fans, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Owners generally only like talking to the media when things are good. Our owner is a great example. He loved the press conferences when we hired people or when we were signing players. But when we traded players or fired managers, it was me. And that's fine. That was my job. But fans notice that. When people, it's like having a friend who only wants to celebrate with you, but when you need them for something, they're not there for you. That's how I view what you have to be with the fans and the media when things are going badly.
Interesting.
All right, shifting focus to the Oakland Athletics, or whatever they're called.
What a cluster.
The Athletics. Why do I still have a hard time seeing them in Vegas?
Because you're rational and you've been around for decades. And you haven't, and you're a, here's the real reason, you're a journalist.
Allegedly.
You wouldn't be able. I've never said that.
Who
said
I know,
that?
But I have.
You call yourself allegedly a journalist?
Well, every now and then.
That's funny. If you're going to write an article, that's the funniest thing you've said to me. And I'm allegedly a baseball executive. And so
yeah, but you got a ring.
Yeah, fair.
I did get a ring.
You got a ring, so you have proof.
Yeah.
It's funny. I view not the ring as the proof that I was an executive. I view this the new ballpark that's albeit empty, and also the sale price. That was really what showed me that I was an executive. Not that, you know, we got a bunch of two out RBIs, which were super fun to get. But it, as you know very well, in Toronto, it's hard to get a ring.
Yes.
But I think the reason why you're struggling as a journalist is you wouldn't be able to pass this article through your editor, is my view.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to go to print with the facts that you have in front of you. There aren't even enough sources that can tell you that this is a deal that's done. You can't go to print because there was a 30-0 vote by MLB to allow relocation. It's a bunch of horse hockey. They didn't have any due diligence. They had no information before that vote. You can't go to print because John Fisher is seeking limited partners and hiring investment banks. Well, that means they're going to Vegas. You can't go to market with an article because they're imploding the Tropicana and say, well, that means they're moving to Vegas. There's actually no proof together that this move is happening, but it may, but I just don't think it's print worthy yet. That's why I think you're struggling.
Major League Baseball do anything about that? Like, you know, you talk about the Rockies being bad. You talk about the Marlins being bad. Obviously, the A's are bad. That's a lot of bad teams. Like, that's too many teams.
Can I challenge you? The A's are not as bad as the White Sox, Rockies, and Marlins.
Yeah, the A's are actually.
I guess.
I mean, the A's, I think they've won more games. It took them till the middle of June, maybe, to win what they've won this year.
Yeah,
I don't
somehow.
Mean to challenge you. You know I love you, Barker, but I think all that right. there's –
Yeah, they're
the
not.
These are not terrible. Jeff, where are you on that?
I think that they're not terrible, but at the end of the year, I think they'll be right down there with the White Sox.
With the Terribles?
With the Terribles.
Yeah, they're 13-17. I mean, the only reason that they're third is because the Astros just haven't shown up for the season. I guess they were the only team that didn't get the memo that the season started.
That's awful.
Well, they've also had tremendous injuries to their pitching rotation.
They got a pretty good lineup, though.
I think their offense is so good, but you need pitching. So, the three of us could compete to be a four starter on that team.
Pretty much. So when do you think Rob and the owners need, and I'm using this in air quotes, need to know about Vegas? Is there... Do they?
No, they have a 4-year deal in Sacramento. It was 3 plus an option, and my guess is there could be another option if they need it to get to 5 years. General rule of thumb is 36 months for construction. So if they're dreaming of April of 28, that really, though, means people aren't writing this, but you don't put your end date for a CO, certificate of occupancy. You don't put it for April of the season you're starting. You do it in the beginning of spring training.
Right.
You need to get the CO in March of 28. So I would say March of 25, you better see some movement. And I don't mean movement like pushing dirt around.
Yeah.
I mean construction documents. I mean subs that have been hired and materials have been sourced. I mean rebar starting, that sort of thing for a stadium to open in 28. I think that it could bleed to 29 very easily.
Oof.
And I don't think baseball would panic. But past that, I would think that they're going to realize that Vegas may not work.
Yeah, and one of my concerns would be that this emerges as an issue in the next round of CBA talks if it drags on too long. And then that's and I mean there are a lot of circles that are hard to square when it comes to negotiations, as you well know. But my goodness, kind of where we're putting a team would appear to be a pretty significant hurdle.
It actually is also more what the facilities are like.
Okay.
But also that's one of 30. So it's really three out of 10 players in the union are part of that organization. So they're not going to blow up an entire CBA because one of the teams has subpar facilities. And from an ownership standpoint, the more the union complains about uniforms and chefs in the kitchen and weight rooms, the better it is for owners in a negotiation because they're focused on pennies while you're picking up dollars when it comes to pension and benefits and other issues that are very meaningful in a CBA negotiation. But it's true that the Oakland situation is a problem because the union wants more teams competing for top free agents because that, in their mind, raises the salary scale. And so they want teams cycling through, and teams like the Marlins and the A's have been on the bottom of payroll. The Rays are an example, and they would like to see those teams cycle up more toward the middle and give other teams a chance to cycle on through the bottom.
David, good stuff as always, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this.
You're awesome. Thanks, buddy.
Be well.
Thank you guys so much. See you soon.
See
Absolutely. David Sampson's host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. It's a terrific podcast.
It's wonderful.
Former MLB executive, Marlins and Expos. And watch it and learn. Because
yeah, he's a genius, basically.
Well,
he sells it like nobody else.
He has signed some.
You can't teach experience.
He's signed some big checks. He's won a World Series. He's made some bad decisions.
Yeah.
Got a ballpark bill. I mean, anyhow.
I wonder if Major League Baseball's called him about moving stadiums. What's the no-nos? What's the good things? What you know? How do we get this done in a friendly way? Like, I'm sure he knows.
I mean, that ballpark, there were a lot of issues with that ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, he's been through all of it, right?
A strong arm folks in Miami. I've always thought about that conversation with Whitey Herzog. And Whitey said, people in there, I remember him saying, why on earth would you, because we agreed that for it to work, both ballparks would have to be indoors. This is back in like early 90s.
Yeah.
And again, the Cardinals, I think Whitey lived a lot of time in St. Pete because that's where they spent spring training. He probably spent the offseason down there. But he used to say, Florida's full of old people. Why are old people going to want to move indoors on a beautiful night to watch baseball? And he just said it'll never work in Florida. The teams will always be in financial jeopardy. You know, it worked for the Marlins. I mean, they won two World Series, but there has been... You know, there have been long-running concerns there. And, of course, we know about Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
But Tampa's a weird market because Tampa's TV numbers...
Yeah, off the charts.
They're off the charts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we talked about that with Tampa people, with their TV people.
Yep.
Their numbers are off the charts.
Well, it's hard to get to, too, right? Where it's located.
Yeah.
And...
But it's always... I've always kind of thought when you look at the demographics. And then, you know, David makes a great point about Miami. About there not being a large corporate community, and it's true. You know which, you know where you don't want to be in the summer? You do not want to be in South Florida in July and August.
Mm.
I mean, I do because the Clevelander Bar is there, so I'm okay with that. But I mean, by and large, you don't want to be down there in the middle of the summer. So a lot of the money that is in South Florida that would be buying season tickets is, you know, back home in Connecticut or whatever. But It's always kind of been strange to me because there's such a huge Latino community in Florida. And, you know, a lot of it is a Cuban emigre community. But I think Major League Baseball just assumed that that would also be one of the selling points with it, right? Is that you would be able to tap into that large Latino community. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't worked out.
Yeah, I just don't think either one of those organizations are fun. Tampa? I'm going to watch Tampa.
Tampa's
Marlins?
Fun.
I'm watching. Really?
Well, the Marlins were.
They're not fun.
No, the Marlins used to. The Marlins were. That Marlins World Series team that beat the Yankees, they were a hoot.
It's far and few between, is my point, right? Yeah. I mean, you're trying to talk about longevity here and getting fans consistently to come. The product has to be fun. I mean, and on top, you got to win a lot of games. So, yeah, I don't know if it's a huge issue, but. I just don't know how you ever get free. Why would a free agent ever want to go play for Oakland? Even if they move. Why would you want to go to an organization that...
If they moved to Vegas, I'd go.
Would you?
No income tax. It's Vegas.
Maybe. I'm sure if the checks are way bigger than everybody else's.
I kind of disagree with David in one area. I think the issue is going to be getting to Vegas without killing somebody. If they're in, once they're in Vegas, I think that it'll work, but getting there is going to be difficult.
Yeah, what is that show?
We'll do Blue Jays talk after the game. We'll be back tomorrow. Enjoy the baseball.